Hello and welcome back to the Mindful World Summit. I'm Dr. Stacy and I'm thrilled today to be joined by Ryan Lear. Ryan is a yoga student, a yoga teacher, and a dad. And he is also the founder of One Yoga and Vinyasa Yoga for Youth. He's here today to share his wisdom around yoga and how this ancient practice integrates mind, body, and spirit that is really essential and helpful for helping us all live authentically in a grounded, truthful way and to live a more inspired life. Welcome, Ryan, to the summit.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Stacy.
We're so glad that you're here. You bring so much wisdom and practice and teachings to this conversation, both as a practitioner and a dad. So we're interested to hear more about your perspective on all things mindful with parenting.
Thank you.
You talked about, like, one of the things that you had shared that you wanted to talk about is yoga as medicine. Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah. What I've been learning over these years practicing and teaching is what one of my teachers once said to us, he said, yoga is mind medicine. And I didn't really get it at the beginning when I was doing it to heal, like I was doing it to heal my shoulder from a basketball injury.
Okay.
And I started practicing every day and I just realized the effect that it was having on my mind, which is still and was very turbulent, like the ups and downs.
Mm.
And, you know, going through all of these different forms of medicine for my mind, I felt like yoga was by far the best one.
Interesting. So you came to yoga, it sounds like, for a physical rehab kind of perspective, and you found something even greater, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting. How long ago was that?
Well, you know, I found yoga in high school meditating,
okay. But
it was like still using it like to become the best basketball player I could be rather than the best dad I could be. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was practicing meditation, but then I found the postures like in my mid-20s and I kind of got hooked on them since then.
Interesting. It's so interesting that I think, my experience as well, that yoga's just got this sneaky way of creeping up on you in terms of the insights and the awareness and some shifts that happen emotionally. Do you have any perspective on how that happens? Like, what is that about?
Yeah, it works. If you do it, it works. I have a teacher and she said to us one day, yoga is compressed evolution. So she said, if you do it properly and if you like pay attention, do it safely and with your breath, that stuff that would take you years and years to work through, like you can work through in moments through a mm-hmm. practice of like being aware and conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And yoga isn't necessarily like enlightenment. It's just like being present to what's here right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But an interesting way of entry through movement and stillness, I guess, but both involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of this real integration of a number of things going on at the same time, but with this, the impact being this real connection, like a deep connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your practice has really evolved over time. And you mentioned that your father, can you tell us how many children you have and maybe how your practice may have evolved through parenting?
Yeah, this is, I have two children. I lost one little girl right after she was born, Thora.
Oh, wow.
So, and I have Kaya who's 16 now. So mm-hmm. I have one, Kaya loves to dance, so she's here dancing. Then I have Thora, and she's kind of, I catch her once in a while flying around, like I get glimpses. Mm-hmm. I would have never believed that.
Wow.
So it's the toughest thing I've ever had to deal with. And it's within that, it's been such a blessing. Like I have a little guardian angel.
Wow. Wow, that I had no idea.
Yeah.
That is one of the hardest things anyone can really experience, the loss of a child.
Well, it was 5 years ago, and you know, it took me a few years where people, because I get that question a lot, how many kids do you have? And I went for years, I would say one, but now it's like I do have two children, and one is still, her heart's still beating, and she's here, and the other one isn't here in her body, but she's still here in, like, in my heart. And I believe she's actually, like, I can feel her sometimes, which I would have never thought.
Interesting.
And, I don't Yeah. And so you talk about having to go to yoga, like, to deal with the loss of Thora. I don't know. I don't know what I would do without yoga. Like, okay. I probably would have killed myself.
Wow. Wow.
And, but thankfully I still got my 16-year-old, and I was depressed, like, pretty much, we're just getting real, so pretty much, pretty much like suicidally depressed for a few months, maybe just about a year after we lost her. And I was in bed, I'm in my house right now, I was in bed, and Kaya came up and slept beside me one night. And you know, I couldn't find any will to live. And I remember that night actually, like, just listening to her and watching her breathe for that night. I must not have slept until the wee hours. And that was the moment where I was like, I realized I still have this beautiful human who's relying on me, who loves me, who needs me. And so she's like, she's the reason why I still wake up in the morning.
Wow. Wow. And then, I mean, thank you so much for sharing that. There's so many, it's one of these stories that many people have experienced, not enough people talk about in terms of the loss of a child, especially early on. And people who never had the chance to hold or see their child on the outside, but lost them before they were able to survive outside of them, but still have this strong connection.
Yeah, she. We were so grateful that she opened her eyes for a few moments, and like, her mom is such an amazing woman, and so we knew that. Well, we were still praying and hoping for a miracle, but we were pretty sure she wasn't going to make it long. And yeah, I'm just telling you everything. You're good at what you do, Stacy, Dr. Stacy. So she had, like, Thora came out, she kind of like opened her eyes, and Caitlin just handed her to me, and just like, and she said, like, well, I got to hold her for 9 months, like, you need to be able to hold her. And so she like stopped breathing in my hands. It was like, I was like singing a little chant to her, a little song to her, and it was surreal. But I'm so grateful to have those moments with her. She still comes through once in a while in this in the storms and in the lightning, and it's pretty wild.
Wow. I'm so glad that you had the preparation going in there. As much as there's been times of real darkness, you and your wife, your partner, had the presence to be present. You had the foundation, the presence to be able to just be there with her during that important transition.
Yeah, it was wild. Like, the experience, there's a bunch of like little stories I could tell you, but it was, that transition was really incredible.
And so, you know, going through the darkness of the loss and then coming back from a place of your child breathing beside you and connecting with her breath. And as I listen to you, I think about some other parents I've had the pleasure to meet or on their journeys through loss, and how, whether it's another being, it could be an animal or another child that they have, and just feeling that other being's breath and connecting with it when they have a hard time connecting with their own seems to be a soothing thing. So I find that really interesting that you naturally tuned into that.
Yeah, I never thought of it, you know, about I never thought of it that way, about the breath being such an integral part of the whole experience and the whole thing. And it's such a, like, it's such a huge part of yoga too, that people, some people realize, but many people don't realize the power of the breath.
Tell me a bit more about that, the power of the breath, and how that is so important to yoga. Is that the foundation of yoga?
It's so funny. So Kaya is my 16-year-old. She was maybe 8 or 9. Well, 7 or 9, and she was like, had a fever, and she was on the couch. Okay, so she's like half asleep, half in and half out. And she just started talking, like, with her eyes closed, half asleep. And she was like, "Breath is the key to yoga," she kept saying.
Really?
But yeah, she's it was really funny, and she's like, "Be thrilled with yoga." It was cool. I wrote down everything she said, because my little yoga book beside me. But yeah, they say that breath is the key to the mind. So if you want to control your mind, which is very subtle, right? Like, you can't even really feel your mind, but you can feel your breath. You can hear your, so it's like the yogis say, to control your mind, you learn to control your breath. And then the first step, though, before you learn to control your breath, is you learn to control your body and to stabilize your body. And so it's all connected. But the cool thing about the breath, and like, is you can stabilize your mental space with breath. Like, it's so cool. I was watching this, I think it was from 2009 or something, but this symposium they had with the Dalai Lama, who I really love and respect, and Eckhart Tolle, is that how you say it, or Tolle?
Yeah.
Eckhart Tolle.
I've heard both.
we got to talk to Steve, because Steve's really into it. And he was talking, you'd mentioned stillness before, and now we're talking about breath, and he said that, I'm pretty scientific, so I tried to find the scientific study after, but he's talking about football, soccer players, when they step up to the penalty kick, and they started doing studies on how much time they would take, and the guys who immediately, or guys or girls, I think it was men, they were, I'm not sure, but the people they were studying, if they just immediately, as soon as the whistle blew and they went to kick it, they had far less success than the players who stood there for, he said, a few moments and like tuned into the stillness and tuned into themselves inside and then took the kick. And he said the number was, I think the word he used was infinitely better, but a way better result. I know that's competition in sports, but of like being your best, you know?
No, it's absolutely definitely as the foundation. I'm thinking about, I'm going to forget about the name of the author, but this will come back to me. I should know this. The Inner Game of Tennis. Thank you. And basically, it's tennis, but it's all about mindfulness and focus and being clear on what game you're playing. It's like lessons for life. But this idea of, I mean, anyone can apply it themselves. You just don't even really think about it. Just focus on where that ball is supposed to go. And it's incredible how your body knows the movement. I tested it myself. I'm not a great tennis player, but my game was substantially better just with the trust and the flow and not really overthinking it. So the idea of it just being grounded and where you want to put your focus is massive.
Awesome. Yeah, not overthinking too, like you said. Yeah. Oh my God, that's what gets me into trouble.
Absolutely. But this is what's so incredible about this practice, and interesting. I really appreciate you outlining like the steps involved in terms of body, breath, mind, right? And where people can start. And then it sounds like as people get more experience with the practice, that it all becomes a bit more integral.
Yeah, and I think then some of the yogis say the next step is like your soul. So then it's like you go from the really gross physical to the subtle and to the like inner core, and then you want to touch the core to the periphery and keep that interface or something. I'm not exactly sure how it works,
right?
But I know it works,
right?
It's interesting. And go ahead.
No, go ahead. You too.
Oh, in this, there's this book called the Yoga Sutras, and it's like four books put into one, and lots of people call it the Yoga Bible. And it outlines the steps of yoga and the, what happens when you do this. And it talks about, there's one sutra that says, in order to control your anxiety and your mind, like when you're really unable to deal, the book says really simply, you extend your exhalation and pause. Mm. And it's like, imagine if, and it actually works. That's the thing. And the yoga masters that I've studied with, mm-hmm. those people know how to exhale and to, mm-hmm. and to wait and to not get caught up in that vibration, but to right. like get grounded, like you had said, you know, just to mm-hmm. get grounded and to get present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so these physical things, it's like using that physical realm, the body, to really feel that expansion. Right? Like in a physical yeah. way, but like in a mental and emotional way, as opposed to like, it's like this busyness and we feel crowded almost.
Yeah, right. Right? Oh, that constriction is not feeling good. If I don't do yoga, I can get caught in that, you know,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
get out and like, and I consider now my yoga practice going out in the nature and being it with the wind and with the water, you know, and just like being with the nature.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's a little hippie. I might look a little hippie, but it sound good. Maybe I am a little hippie.
Listen, I am too, and I completely resonate with that because that's a practice of mine in terms of going for a mindful run, being by the water. I unfortunately live by the water, and just take in and connect with whatever the weather, you know, whatever's going on. And I'm always just, it's magic every time. I'm so addicted to it.
Yeah,
I'm cool. Literally addicted to it. Anyway, we could talk all day about these neat things, but it's so interesting to talk about yoga or meditation in the context of life as opposed to the studio.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I had no idea, but, and I don't want to be, it's like yoga is a way of life and a lifestyle so much more than what you're doing on your mat. And honestly, according to the traditional yoga, like all the old school teachers, like the physical practice is only 1/8 of the whole thing. You know, in that book I was telling you about, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, he mentions the postures 3 times in the book and the lifestyle and like the moral code. They're called the yamas and the niyamas, 18 times.
Mm.
And so, like, I don't know who all listens to this podcast, but, you know, I know people who can do a whole bunch of gymnastic yoga poses who aren't yogis, but I know many healthcare practitioners and caregivers who are way more yogis than people who can do the postures.
Right.
Because it's not gymnastics. It's basically whether you're being kind and whether you're being truthful and whether you're being generous, like that's more of what yoga is than the fancy postures and the breath exercises and the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my perspective. And that's what I've been taught by my teacher.
Yeah. And that's so helpful to hear from someone who is, you know, practicing teaching that, you know, if I understand you correctly, it almost sounds as if the physical practice is a way of elevating you or grounding you in these higher teachings or these other ways of life. It's something that keeps you connected to that. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, I believe so.
Okay. And so those teachings are about the integration of what it means to be, have real presence and consciousness in our everyday interactions. And that's exactly what this summit is about.
Oh, that's so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so kindness, empathy, compassion.
Yeah. But
so, are there other things that are those core teachings of yoga that go beyond the physical postures?
Yeah, I'll break them down if you like.
Please do.
I could talk for days. I wasn't even looking forward to this interview, to be honest. And now I'm so stoked. I didn't know what to expect, but I really love chatting with you.
Okay, great.
The first two steps of yoga, of the eight limb path, it's called Ashtanga Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. Not like the sweaty five breaths in each pose yoga, but the eight limb yoga. So the first two are the roots and the foundation, and there's 10 principles. And the two main ones to remember and what it all comes back to are ahimsa, which is a is to take away, himsa is violence. So that's to take away violence. On a positive side, that's love or compassion or being kind. This really great yogi I know, Julia Butterfly Hill, she had a big life change and she decided she was going to stand up, well, sit for the trees in the redwood forest. And she stayed in a tree 738 days with her ground support team. She wrote a book called Legacy of Luna. And she said, like, she's so cool. And she said, well, why did I use two negative words? She said, ahimsa means to live so fully and presently in love that there's no room for anything else to exist. So it's like to love. And I've got a story about ahimsa because it's such an important principle. And yes. I think that yoga comes right down to ahimsa and to authenticity and truthfulness. But the ahimsa story, you always hear the story about Gandhi be the change. That's a story for another day. Hopefully we can do another podcast.
Sure.
Cool. But there's a story when Gandhi is with Paramahansa Yogananda. He was integral in bringing yoga to the West. And Yogananda said to Gandhi, okay, so it's great in principle because Gandhi based to free India, he based his life on satyagraha, truth, and nonviolence. That was how he made people change their heart and he freed India from the colonial rule. And I think I had too much coffee. I'm starting to stuff up. And so he said, well, what would happen to you, Gandhi, if a cobra was going to attack you? Like, what would you do? And so how I read the story is Gandhi, like, kind of took a breath, laughed, and said, well, I don't know what I'd do because it's never happened. But I would hope that I would not be violent or fearful, because those would be violating my principles of fearlessness and of violence. So he said, this is where Gandhi sounds a little hippie, but he said, I would try to calm the cobra by vibrations of love. And so sure enough, years later, Gandhi is giving darshan, and the story goes, a cobra came through the crowd, and he kind of like called his handlers off. He stayed calm. The cobra crawled up him and back out into the jungle or wherever they were. And he actually used, so it's like a vibration.
Yeah.
And he's like one of the great yogis who actually like practiced what he preached. And I'll quickly tell you the Be the Change story, because you always see the t-shirt, right?
Be the Change.
So the story I heard about is a woman brought her son for darshan or for a meeting with Gandhi. And they walked for like 2 days. It was an arduous journey. They get there and she's asking Gandhi, she says, Gandhiji, would you please tell my son to stop eating sugar because he's acting wild? And Gandhi looks at the boy, looks at her and says, I can't say anything to him. Would you please come back in 2 weeks? And so she's like, Gandhi, no, I'm just joking. So she didn't say that. So she goes back. They come back a couple weeks later and they get to Gandhi. And she's like, Gandhiji, I was here. Would you please tell my son to stop eating sugar? It's not good for him. So Gandhi like says, son, you must stop eating sugar. It's not good for you. I wonder if the kid ever ate sugar. I never heard that story after. And so so then she's like, well, thank you, you know. But why couldn't you said that 2 weeks ago? And he said, because I hadn't stopped eating sugar myself. So pretty good one about Gandhi. But so the yoga tradition is based on the same thing that Gandhi based his life on, is nonviolence. Mm-hmm. And the next one is to be truthful and without hurting people. Like you still have to remember kindness, but you're years to be honest and true. And if you're not able to, you're supposed to be quiet. Then the third one is it's to not steal. And we're talking, like, it's easy not to steal things from people probably, but we're talking even on energetic level, people's reputation and people's time and energy. And the fourth one is Brahmacharya, and Brahma is a creator, Acharya is to walk with the creator. So how I got it taught to me, it's often translated celibacy, but my yoga teacher is like, well, if it was celibacy, there would be no more people left because nobody would have a baby.
Fair enough.
So it's like being true to the creative force that we are, and having reverence for the creative energy or the sexual energy rather than misusing, abusing, or disusing it.
Okay.
And then the fifth one is aparigraha, and that one is not to be greedy. And it's okay to have things, it's just not okay to be attached to them, is how my teacher taught me. Mm-hmm. And then the second side is more personal discipline. So it's being clean, being accepting and content. Acceptance is such a great way of translating the second word of santosha. And the third one is tapas, and it literally means to burn or to blaze, and it's how they purify gold. So it's to, like, always do your very best. But then you don't want to burn out, so you have the next one is svadhyaya, and that's to find balance and to be reflective and to know yourself. And it could be through journaling or studying sacred books. And then the last one, I've got this really great yoga teacher, Baron Baptiste, and he's into Christian mysticism, and like he talks about Moses, and so the last step is Ishvara Pranidhana. It means to surrender everything to God. And if you're not if you don't have faith in God or in creator, then just to be available and to be humble. And so how he described it was so cool. I think it's in his book. He said, be like Moses at the Red Sea, realize you're in over your head by yourself and give everything to God. And Mother Teresa said, God makes things happen when we let things happen. So it's kind of like this feminine, like this powerful feminine energy of receptivity and of, like, giving it all up.
Yes.
Kind of cool.
I've got chills right now.
Sweet yoga.
Wow, Ryan. And you know, it's so powerful. So powerful, because when people watch the summit and they speak to other teachers that come from another tradition, but also wisdom traditions, it's similar kinds of things, but, you know, similar themes come up, and these are from, like, centuries ago, right? Like, this is powerful, good stuff, and it's so helpful to have this outlined, because people don't understand necessarily that this is part of yoga, right? And if we actually had this understanding and engaged in the practice at the same time, wow, it takes it to a whole other level, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So tell me, you know, you are a parent, and you've been through a tremendous journey in your life and into parenthood and in different levels of understanding. I have to think that when you go through something that's life altering, your understanding of this practice changes as well. And tell me how your practice has evolved since having both of your children.
Yeah. Oh man. I mentioned earlier Ashtanga yoga, and there's also a specific yoga called Ashtanga yoga. Mm-hmm. And there's the guru of that system I got to study with one time for a couple of weeks. It was very cool. Patabi Joyce. And okay, where should I start this story? Okay, I'll tell you. I like to tell stories. I feel like it gets the point better. So early fatherhood, Kaya is probably 7 or 8, probably near the time when she was having those feverish dreams.
Yes.
I just thought of feverish dreams, the lyrics in the Tragically Hip. I love Gord Downie and how he left his body. He's such an inspiration. Mm-hmm. And that song, I had a feverish dream. But so anyway, I'm like, Kai is in gymnastics and it's great. And I'm kind of like being a yogi, not a yogi, but trying to be a yogi.
I see.
I'm like, I'm going to practice headstand, shoulder stand, 20 minutes. I'm going to make sure I do another half hour. I was like very committed to my physical practice because I thought that was the discipline I needed to be a yogi. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit strong, though, because my daughter's taking gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm not really into the competition part of it. I'm former, like, I had enough competition my whole days mm-hmm. before being a serious parent. So I'm like, she would have been, 8 or 9, and I'm unrolling my yoga mat. And in my head, I'm like, oh, Kai's at gymnastics competition. And so mm. here I am going to do my yoga poses. Mm. And I thank God, something flashed. I'm like, get to gymnastics competition. Mm-hmm. And so I got there and I walked in and I still remember her face. It makes me want to cry. How much it meant to Kaya that I was there mm-hmm. supporting her.
Yeah,
and I almost missed it because I was doing yoga, but right. yoga is more off the mat than on the mat, and we use what we do on the mat to prepare ourselves for off the mat. So this mm-hmm. Ashtanga guru, he would say, there, in his system, there's 6 levels, so there's 6 series, mm-hmm. and the first series is difficult enough, like triangle pose and a lot of the angles and the shapes. The second series is a lot of arm balances and like the angels and the demons, and the third series and the sixth series, I can't even dream of doing some of those poses. Mm-hmm. And I practice a lot. So, but he says the seventh series is having a family and being in relationship and having being a parent and being mm-hmm. in relations with other people. So mm-hmm. like that's way more advanced than any of the poses you could do.
I love that. So we got a lot of yogis rocking around that maybe don't even really realize it. But it's an amazing training for this ultimate aspiration of how to be in the world, truly be.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of my physical practice, because I do believe in it and, like, I do it pretty much every day. I try to do it every day. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty consistent. And it used to be I would just sweat and work and push myself for an hour and a half. But, you know, I started breaking down and I was doing, like, I was getting repetitive strain injuries and just overdoing it. Mm-hmm. And there's another yoga book that outlines these ways that yoga is not going to succeed in your life. And the first one is by overdoing it. Mm-hmm. And I see it in so many of my friends, like, mm-hmm. who really want to do yoga, but they just push. And mm-hmm. so what I do now in my practice is it's way more restorative and slower. And I stay in the poses. One of my teachers said, because he would hold the poses like 45 minutes. And he said, I used to play, but now I stay. Dude, I saw this guy. Well, he's called the Michelangelo of yoga. He's like in time, most 100 most influential people of the century. He's amazing. BKS Iyengar. He's got a system of yoga that's very alignment based.
Yeah,
I saw him at 94, and this guy was doing 2.5 hours of postures every day, and he would stay in intense back bends and headstand half hour. I saw him in this back bend like that these little gymnasts could only do, a 94-year-old man, wow. For 45 minutes. I'll send you a photo of
we'll have to post that with the summit because that's incredible. Ryan, we're almost out of time for our interview today. I feel like we could keep talking for a long time. You have so much to share, and this has been so wonderful having you walk us through these moments of these teachings that are the foundation of this practice. I'm wondering, what do you think is a major issue that if we solve will make the biggest difference in the world? Does yoga have something to tell us about that?
Yeah, I wonder, you know, like yoga at its one way of looking at the meaning of it is to join or to connect. And I feel like the biggest problem that I see in my friends, family, community is disconnection and people feeling isolated and lonely. And I feel like there's great potential in so many arenas if we can just learn how to connect people and bring people together in community and, you know, just to love each other.
And you, I mean, you also work with children. You bring children into this practice. You bring young adults and youth into this practice. And do you see a shift in their sense of connection? Do you pick up on that?
Yeah. I feel like they just get access to being able to express themselves, like, and be okay with being sensitive and be okay with being different. I don't know how to, I don't know if I'm explaining it.
Yeah, you are. It sounds like they become more grounded in who they are.
Yeah, more just and more comfortable in their own skin. And a big reason why I'm getting and just like I'm working hard to get it to the youth, like the teenage kids, especially in Northern Saskatchewan, because the suicide rates are so high. And going through suicidal thoughts and depression and being able to, and it's not like I'm always rainbows and butterflies happy, but I know that those feelings will pass if I stay committed to being true to myself and to doing this practice. And I know that it would save, it will, if we expose yoga to kids, it's going to save a few lives, you know?
Yes. And you know that from your own experience too, of feeling like you're on that edge of despair. Yeah. And so, you know, I see that as your own, taking your own journey and learning from it and being able to share that with others too, and from a very genuine place.
Yeah. So. Oh, thanks. Yeah. And I used to not share it because I wanted to be a put together, everything's good, yogi, I'm enlightened. You know.
We all are going to have our moments of crisis in this life, but having this foundation can help us through. I'm wondering, before you leave, because you're a yogi and you're so practiced, I'm wondering if you could give us a little short practice that parents, anyone watching, could start doing at home.
Yeah, I'd love to. When when your teenager is causing trouble and you're having trouble dealing.
Yes.
Okay, so find a comfortable seat. You could be on a chair or on the floor. Just get the sitting bones grounded and get wherever your feet or your shins, your ankles touching. Just try to shift left to right, front to back, and move towards the center. And what you're looking for is to have your spine straight, but be kind of like effortless. So almost like you're being pulled up, like the stem of a flower growing toward the sun. So go up tall through the crown of your head and stay rooted through the sitting bones. Now just relax, 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 and exhale, exhale, exhale. The exhale is connected to relaxation. So nice and smooth, allow an inhalation to come in. 4, 3, 2, 1, pause. Then long exhale, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pause, inhale, slow, 4, 3, 2, 1, pause, exhale, slow, just stay with it, try to be still, 4, 3, 2, 1, pause, now draw a deep, powerful breath in, smooth and slow, pause. Now relax your belly as you exhale, release, relax. Then open your eyes and just kind of look inside yourself. What did Bob Marley say? Open your eyes and look within. hopefully you're fairly satisfied with the life you're living. And if you're not, do more yoga. And if you are, do more yoga. That was just three breaths, you know. Mm-hmm. And even I didn't do the breaths myself, but I have. But just guiding them, I feel a difference.
Yes.
Just taking three conscious breaths.
Amazing.
And so you can get your vibration, like, you can stabilize yourself anytime you want. And then what the yogis say is if you start doing this every day, your vibration changes. And so I know lots of people who do yoga as a really physical, powerful thing, and they become a little bit, like when I was doing it just for sweat and to get strong and fitness, I was becoming a little bit rigid and a little bit tense. Mm-hmm. But yoga is supposed, if your yoga is working, you're becoming more, people want to be around you more, you're more tolerant and you're more mm-hmm. peaceful. So you can use your breath to create those qualities in yourself. It's really amazing.
Wow. Ryan Lear, this was so awesome. Thank you for that. I'm going into my next part of my day feeling grounded. And it's such a great lesson that it doesn't take long. It just takes the intention and a little guidance to get started with a practice like this. If people want to find out more about what you're doing or events that you're doing, how do they get in the know?
Yeah, I've got a yoga school called One Yoga, and mm-hmm. oneyoga.ca is the website. Mm-hmm. And I've got my own Ryan Lear website.
Okay.
And I'm always on Instagram.
Yay. Okay.
And then when do I get to ask you some questions?
Well, you know what? We can set that up. We can. I'm very happy to do that. I love talking about yoga, and Saskatoon was where I was first introduced to it, believe it or not.
No way.
Yeah. We have to talk.
Yeah. Anyway. I didn't know you knew about Toontown.
There's so much to learn, isn't there? Ryan, this is a pleasure. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for all that you're doing in the world to bring these teachings to so many.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to meet you.
Awesome. Same here.